Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. Today's story won the 2012 Scarlet Stiletto Award for Great Film Idea, and there are some wonderful bits of action and imagery and a few surprises along the way. Much Ado About Nunning by Helen Isles. In the upper hall of Chartreuse Monastery, by a stone arch that overlooked the vineyard, Marie-Agnès wriggled her shoulders with irritation. She tipped her head back, tilted it side to side, lifted her chin tightly, anything to relieve the pulling of the wimple, as she listened to Antoine tell his plans for the day. Dearly, she wanted to prod about inside the dreaded device with a stick to unsnare the wisps of red curls that had caught at the back of her neck. Equally, she wanted to attack her legs with her fingers, for her habit was stiff and scratchy. But she dared do neither. Instead, she stayed focused on Antoine. Dressed in a dark grey robe, his shoulders propped lightly against a tall stone pillar as he spoke, the man gazed down at the rustic landscape that stretched away from the monastery, his mellow voice drifting down the wide stone hall and over the balcony. Marie-Agnès wondered how he tolerated the scratchy dark wool that clung to his smooth gold skin. She glanced up. Father Sobien had entered the colonnade from the further end, the priest dressed in a much darker robe than Antoine's. He strode toward them, momentarily observing the same peaceful setting Antoine enjoyed. The rosary beads at his waist clunked and chattered on gold-spun cord as he walked, hands palm over back, clasped in front of him. "Oh, that would have to be Father Sobien," Antoine whispered without looking. "He fairly rattles along." Marie-Agnès grinned, her cheekbones lifting as her green eyes lit to the comment, the movement pushing her face harder against the wimple, reminding her that it was there. Quickly she retracted her mirth. Nuns weren't supposed to laugh. This was further impressed by the old priest's glare as he passed them. The look she had suffered many times in the last few days, as she jogged down the corridor or scuttled up the stairs, her habit cleanly hoisted to clear her booted feet. She glanced at Antoine when the priest had passed. His lips and chin tight, retracting his own mirth, he remained nonchalant and continued watching the land beyond the sacred walls. When Father Sobien had gone, two white-robed novices entered from the other end. They eyed Marie-Agnès and Antoine, tittered behind their hands and hurried on. Antoine shook his head. "Well, Sister Agnès, I had better go and check the gardens," he said almost with a sigh. Fraternizing was not exactly accepted in the nunnery. Marie-Agnès savoured a last look of his dark, wavy hair and close-cut beard. He cut a dashing figure in a frock, she thought as he turned. And I had better go and check on Philippe, she considered, it having been a while since she had seen the boy. He should have finished sleeping by now. Nodding his approval, Antoine headed to the gardens that spread between the abbey and the road. Marie Agnès turned in the opposite direction and followed the veranda around the upper floor to the courtyard stairway. From the top of the stairway, she counted 5 doors down. The door to her cell stood open. Instantly, she turned cold and scanned the length of the hallway. Rushing forward, she poked her head in through the open doorway. No sign of Philippe. She leant way out over the white stone railing and scanned the courtyard below. Still no sign of Philippe. Her gaze swept down across the fountain, forced its way through the immense fronded garden, peered into the shadows of the colonnade beyond. And she sighed as Philippe appeared at the far side of the fountain, rippling his hand through the water as he walked around the pond. The boy, small for 8 years, was thin, a veritable scarecrow compared to American boys his age. The thought staunched her resolve to serve him well during his stay. If she let down her guard for a second, his health could deteriorate rapidly. Descending to the garden, she made her way to the boy. Are you all right, Philippe? She asked. The boy nodded. You seem to have found your way around. She had taken an hour immediately on his arrival from Paris to show him the monastery, made sure he knew where to go for peace, for food, for shelter. Looking up, the young Israeli nodded. Yes, sister, I know my way to the kitchen, to the church, and to our room. They were to share the accommodation during his stay. And I know where to find the stairs to the bell tower. He pointed to the flight of stairs behind her. Marie Agnès refrained from smiling. It was good enough that he knew. But she felt guilty for not smiling. That single lack of response reminding her she lacked the slightest shred of maternal instinct. And she wondered, not for the first time, why this task was hers. You may return to the kitchen if you want a snack. You must be hungry by now. Yes, sister. As the boy walked away, she tilted her head side to side again to free the wisps of hair pulling at her neck and let her fingers have an inconspicuous dig through the layers of her skirts. At times she considered discarding this woeful habit, but she knew Father Sabian would castigate her with his eyes and shake his head and accuse, "You're a pitiful example of the Order of Dominica." Still in discomfort, she watched Philippe amble along the corridor, her expression tightening when sisters Beatrice and Margaret stopped to bid him good morning. She did not like the nuns befriending the boy, for he was not their responsibility, he was hers and Antoine's, hers especially. She had been tasked to care for him, to educate him as best she could, and above all else, to keep him safe, and that she would do. As Philippe moved further down the corridor, she felt niggled that he was gaining distance from her. She knew she should stay close to him. The monastery is 80 miles from Paris. Her head countered her instincts. It is safe and secluded, which is why he was brought here. Yet intuition prodded her again to stay close. Philippe reached the kitchen and entered, and by the time she had caught up with him, Sister Lumen was feeding him bread. Oh, don't be so stupid, she rebuked herself again. He's safe inside church walls. 20 nuns constantly drift around him, and God protects the innocent, doesn't he? He's never helped you. She said a few Hail Marys for her thoughts and grimaced as she glimpsed Father Sabian strolling across the yard. His disdainful glance told her he considered others more apt to educate this boy. His opinion made obvious at the start of this assignment, but she ignored his thoughts. He did not know. As the priest climbed the stairs on his way back to his office, Antoine came across the courtyard. "Were you expecting the guardians back today?" he asked with a frown. She shook her head. "No, the boy is in care and is to remain so unhindered." He glanced over his shoulder at the chapel. "Two cars are coming up the road." Marie Agnes went cold again. Father Sebien was not expecting guests, and seldom, if ever, did strangers drop in so far from the city. She leant into the kitchen. "Philippe, go to the room." Looking up, the boy's eyes widened. The bread in his hand fell to the floor.
"Yes, sister."
He scuttled out through the back of the kitchen. Thin brown legs scampered up the stairs to the upper level, where five doors along he reached their room. Entering, he slammed the door behind him. When it shut, Marie Agnes briefly scanned the courtyard. If cars indeed swept along the road, how close were they? She hoisted her habit knee high, turned and scurried up the garden stairs to the topmost level. From the tower, she could see the spread of land in all directions, a beautiful sprawl of farms and rich green vineyards, where few roads severed the scene. Only one road led to the abbey. On it, two cars were less than a mile away, travelling bumper to bumper. It was 12 minutes to Mass, and Marie Agnes sighed. Much closer than that, and the warning might be misconstrued. She rang the bell 3 times, long peals. The sisters below scurried, gaggling like geese. That done, Marie Agnes scuttled back downstairs, her boot heel catching in the hem of her skirt before she reached the bottom, almost toppling her down the last 3 steps. She almost turned an ankle. "Shit," she muttered. Worse, her shoulder smashed against the edge of rough-hewn stone wall as she veered around its corner. "Double shit! Hail Mary! Hail Mary!" She broke into a run, sprinting down the wide stone veranda, her skirts hoiked up like a can-can dancer. She passed 3 sisters coming from the chapel. "Hurry, sisters, take cover!" She spurred them on. They hurried, looking serene and reverent, as if believing whatever happened now was God's will. Marie Agnes shook her head, yet deep down, she wished she could find her faith. She reefed the crisp black habit higher, draped its arduous bulk over her arm and hurried on, dropped back to a wall as she reached the chapel door. "Far out," she hissed beneath her breath. "They could have given me a bit more warning than this." 6 car doors clunked concurrently in the courtyard as she passed through the vestry. She dropped her skirts, adjusted her guimpe and wimple to sit just so, and sedately entered the minster. Serenely she faced the altar and knelt. A second later, the large church doors burst open. She counted to 10, her hands pressed firmly together as she stared up at the statue of Jesus. She remained until footsteps entered the church. Then she rose, turned and moved down the aisle towards the chapel doors. Outside, the cars were parked one behind the other. She could see them through the open doorway. 6 doors meant 6 men. She wondered, where's Antoine? 4 black-suited men stood across the back of the chapel, each unmistakably Arabic. She scanned their faces, registered minor details as her fingers clutched the rosary at her leg. Almani was one of them.
"Good morning, sister," the 3rd man from left greeted with a nod. He smiled like a coyote.
"Good morning," she replied with an equally cordial nod. She blinked with soft innocence.
"We are looking for a small boy."
Her smile remained friendly, the action pushing the wimple tight against her face, yet this time she forced it to remain so. She kept her eyes from Almani, for the man perused her more closely than she liked.
This is a convent, sir. Why would you seek a small boy here? The evasion saved her a lie in church and another dozen Hail Marys. This is the Holy Order of the Sisters of Dominica. So I am told. So you won't mind if we look around then? Maria Agnes went to object, but two more men entered the church. One had Antoine's throat firmly pressed by an arm lock, had his arm wrenched up behind him. The second man waved a blue steel beretta near Antoine's ear, near where blood seeped down Antoine's face. They would hit a priest? Maria Agnes steamed. But she already expected that. These men were capable of anything, including killing a boy. Do you question the word of the cloth? She hoped to stall them, to give Philippe more time, but it went unanswered as three men moved down the aisle towards her. We simply want the boy, the man reiterated as Antoine, still contained, was shunted towards her. He groaned at the pain inflicted in his shoulders. Hoping all sisters had safely taken cover, Maria Agnes glanced up at the altar and hoped more strongly that Philippe would remain concealed within the room that had been prepared for him. 3 days they had worked to have it ready, so he would be safely contained, and he had been carefully briefed in how to use it. If the worst happened and he was near discovery, he was to scamper through the trapdoor and sneak up to the bell tower. But there is no boy, she lied openly, anything to save Philippe. Her eyes caught Antoine's for a mere second. They told her they were in trouble. Nevertheless, she held her ground, undecided and dallying. She could let the men leave the minster through the vestry and commence their search, taking Antoine hostage with them, which would leave her clear to creep along the rear halls and whisk Philippe away. She could shepherd him out of the convent and safely away without being detected. Or she could follow Antoine, plead for mercy, and hope Philippe would stay hidden in his box. She hoped the nuns would abide by the plans they made, and decided she could serve better purpose by saving the life that was now the most in danger. Philippe, for the moment, was a secondary risk. To make it harder for the man to pass, Maria Agnes stayed rooted to the aisle, but the man sidled round her and headed for the vestry. Her narrowing of the aisle, however, secured Antoine's release, and he was now only held at gunpoint. Within moments, the black suits had exited the vestry and entered the courtyard beyond. Maria Agnes followed behind, her stomach churning. That she had one brief chance to save them all, and she must not make a mistake. She reached the sunlit garden where the fountain excited water in the pond, where it spurted it up and lobbed it down with a splash, where large fronded palms in large ochre pots waved airily in the breeze. Skirting round the fountain, she scanned the upper veranda. As yet, it was empty. Two men, however, had headed for the stairs, one at each end of the lower level. Each had a long-nosed pistol drawn. On the lower veranda, two more men opened and closed doors to the sisters' cells, checking each room for Philippe. She couldn't let them find him. She scanned the yard and halls for the fifth man, momentarily ignoring the one who still guarded Antoine, the pistol still at his temple. Antoine stared straight at her, then glanced at her thigh. She refrained from nodding, noting that his captor's deep brown eyes fixed firmly on her. Two men reached the upper floor and started opening doors. It was now too close. She stepped forward. Please don't hurt Father Antoine. Please, please don't hurt anyone. She bumped into a palm pot, its sharp corner raking her shin. Reeling with the pain, she moaned and
thrust her foot up onto the plant stand, clamped her hand over the throbbing wound, then, rubbing vigorously at her leg, she caught up the hem of her habit, hoisted it high, and untethered the Uzi from its hiding strap. Within seconds, the safety was flicked off and she swung it round and strafed the lower veranda. Two Turks bellowed, smashed against the stonework and collapsed to the tiled floor. Sidling with as much grace and speed as the habit would allow, she cleared the curve of the fountain, gained better view. She spattered another burst along the upper walls. Two more men, pistols raised as they peered down at the sounds below, rent screams upon the air. They rebounded off the back wall, toppled over the balustrade and hit the concrete path with a hollow thud before her. Marie Agnès turned the Uzi on Antoine and the man that held him. All was now silent. The sisters safely shielded in their haven. Philippe carefully curled up in his box. She swept a glance for El Money, but failed to find him and knew she'd better look for instant cover. He would fire from seclusion. Dropping her skirts, she retreated to the nearest stone walkway and backed behind a wide stone pillar. As long as she was shielded from stray bullets, she could deal with Antoine first, rectify the turn of events that had disadvantaged them. "It is obvious," the Muslim said, using Antoine as a shield. "We are at a stalemate. I will trade you, him for the boy." She shook her head. "I don't trade with terrorists." "Oh, come now, surely the boy means less to you than the man." Marie Agnès stiffened, wondered if her feelings for Antoine were so apparent, for why else would he make that statement? And if that was so, had Antoine detected them? She did indeed love the man dearly. But Philippe was also important, and a boy that could alter a cause that she would rather see ended. If Philippe was found, they would use him as leverage to free Benchi Absolim. And she had not worked the last 5 years to catch that man, to see him ever free again. "Take him out, Marie. You can do it." It was true. Antoine didn't have to tell her that. Once assigned, the job was everything. She now had two short choices. The first, pop a shot over Antoine's shoulder and hit the Turk dead centre, with the risk of hitting Antoine if he moved. But if she missed, she might not get another chance before Antoine wore a bullet. Movement on the upper floor snatched her thoughts. As the fifth door on the upper hall opened, the eternal stillness in the courtyard, implying the worst was over. Philippe stood looking down at her. She dared not give him indication to hide again, lest she reveal his presence, so she kept her eyes to the Turk. Her second choice now bore in, for two lives hung in the balance. She could punch a hole straight through Antoine, penetrate the Turk at that close range. One shot and she could not miss removing him. The thought made her ill. But she could not allow the slightest chance of Absolim being freed. If Fourieri, Philippe's father, had a choice between saving his son and freeing the world's coldest, bloodiest killer, he would choose his son every time. She knew it, and the peace talks would be damned by his decision. Steadying the Uzi, she wished she could wipe away the sweat from her hands to secure a better grip. "Give me the boy," the Turk demanded. "There is only one thing I'll give you," she said as she raised the Uzi higher. The position drew a better line on the terrorist's forehead. "If that is your choice, then let the priest join me." Marie's eyes flashed open and "No!" leapt to her throat. As Antoine's elbow thrust back into the man's midsection, a short muffled "pumph" stopped him short of victory. Blood sprayed out towards Marie, and a second later, Antoine hunched over, grimaced, and toppled forward. Then a second poof sounded sickeningly close to her. Going cold, she fired her own shot and sent the man levitating backwards. He landed sprawled across the grass, face up, a black hole embellishing his ebony brow like an embedded onyx Indian jewel. She ducked for cover as a bullet whizzed past her, whistling as it skimmed through her hair. It lodged with a crack in the doorframe behind her. She glanced up, saw movement on the upper floor. "Run, Philippe!" she bellowed as Almani slunk along the wall beside him. He was close, so terribly, terribly close. The small boy scooted out the doorway and fled toward the bell tower, his final sanctuary. Unleashing long red locks as she peeled back the annoying wimple and gwimper, Marie darted forward, one hand still on the Uzi. Stripped to a sleeveless muscle shirt and black habit skirt, she reached the stairs. Desperately, she wanted to stop and check on Antoine, but Elmani was close to the boy, closer than she'd ever dare let him be. She could only hope Philippe was swift and that Antoine could hold on till she returned. Clutching the habit skirt and hoisting it high again, she took the stairs two at a time. Almani was on the higher staircase by the time she reached the first. Of Philippe, there was no sign. For the first time in a long, long time, she prayed for them both. At the top of the third flight, she reached the belfry, sidled into the room and, pressing her back against the wall, kept her raised weapon pressed against her breast so it could not be ripped from her. Elmani, however, was on the other side of the platform. Stooped over, he scrutinized the platform and the parapet beyond, but he saw nothing. Marie aimed her weapon, drew closer to the bell shaft, and glanced briefly down it. The drop was a long way down. She checked her ammo clip. There were too few bullets left for any mistakes. Elmani turned from his search, took momentary store of who she was, and smiled, amused. "I see they teach unusual scripture here," he said. "Or does the CIA insist on you finding your God?" His words haunted Marie, her answer too close to the truth. "We can't afford religion. We might feel guilty." He smiled more widely, cunning, his white teeth showing as perfect as a line of polished headstones, yet his black eyes sparked with intensity. Marie moved around the platform, the Uzi still high and ready, her finger itching to squeeze off the shot. But she resisted. The thought of finding God prodded her for what she had done to Antoine. Elmani raised his handgun. "I guess it is with me as it is with you. The job is not finished until it is done." He glanced back over the balcony, still looking for Philippe. She nodded, her green eyes locked to his. Those black evil orbs would be the only sign that her end was nigh. And there it was, a flash. A sudden glimmer deep within the black. She squeezed the trigger, the force of release, lifting the barrel sharply. His pistol barked also, and she turned sharply away. A bullet whacked into the pillar where she had stood, ripped the timber beside her face, and whirled it past her ear. She watched Elmani stagger, reel backwards, watched as he hit the solid railing, arms flailing as he tumbled out into no man's land. He would hit the roofs below with a resounding thud and move no more. She listened to the crack of breaking roof tiles, then sidled to the edge, checking her correct assumption. That was for Antoine. Her lips pursing at the grim image below, she nodded, then shouldered the weapon. There were important things still to do. Leaning over the deep wooden shaft, she called, "Philippe,
You can come up now.
The small boy shinnied back up the knotted bell rope, foot over foot like a macaque monkey. She gripped his skinny arm and helped him back to the platform. When he looked at her for approval, she smiled.
Okay, you can ring the bell now.
Satisfied with El Mani's retirement, she descended the stairs to the garden. Philippe was safe, but she needed to know something more. As she reached Antoine, the bell stopped ringing. Its echo drifted across the land, over the courtyard. Antoine lay on the ground, staring up, blood oozing through his fingers from a hole in his left shoulder. More blood seeped down the grey woolen cloth. She bent over, tears burning behind her eyes as she looked down at him. His dark eyes blinked. Is it over? She nodded and smiled. He started to rise. I'm sorry I missed it. I bet you did some heavy praying up there. Marie scratched at the itch on her upper thigh. I don't know how to pray. Antoine's eyebrows rose and he scowled as he came to his feet. Maybe someone should teach you. Unsheathing a knife from the scabbard strapped to her calf, she deftly slashed a large sword of cloth from the habit's hem and stuffed it under Antoine's hand to stem the bleeding. Then she scratched the itch again. My, your habit is annoying, Antoine smiled, but I must say you look pretty good in a dress.
So do you,
she said, realizing this was the first time he had seen her in one. She rubbed at the tension building at the back of her neck. Compliments from Antoine, few as they were, almost made her blush, always made her heart zing slightly faster. But he was married, and the pictures now playing in her mind meant she was a couple of hundred Hail Marys behind. The end.
Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback, and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au, and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday, then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creators.